I'm joined on the line by Arthur Jones, who's the director of, well, he's the director of a great many things, but today we're going to have a little look at A Farewell Song. Arthur, how are you today?
I'm very good, Stuart. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Arthur, now, for those people who don't know, we're talking about a film that came out nearly 10 years ago and then just came out again. And I know that sounds like something out of Doctor Who, but perhaps you can explain to us a little bit about the film and why it is that we're all excited about it again.
Well, I hope people are excited about it. It's, the genesis of the project was a bit odd, and that's reflected in how it has emerged into the world. You know, we started shooting this thing, that's the producer, Law Tong, and myself and my co-director, Luther Jones, who's my brother, more than 10 years ago now. It's about 2001, 2002, something like that. And we sort of did it off our own bat and decided that we had what we thought was a really great story. And then it was we shot it as and when bits of the story happened, so we just went out to shoot bits of it. And then over time, we ended up being backed by Channel 4 in the UK and the BritDoc Foundation there that supports independent documentary making. So when it was finally finished in about 2006, it got a lot of support in the UK, and we had some great screenings, and we won some awards in the States and things like that. And it got played around, which was great, and it led on to lots of other good projects for us. But what's happened in the last couple of years is that the whole video on demand thing online has become a much bigger factor in everything we do. So we finally had the chance to distribute A Farewell Song online, and that's where it is now. And so we're starting to get interest again from people who might want to distribute it again in some of the countries we've played in before, which is fantastic. And in some ways, I mean, you know, we were quite naive when we shot it, but in a lot of ways, it's a story that I'm probably as attached to as anything else we've done. So it's really important to us.
I think this is a really beautiful story. I mean, you and I live in China, so we are pretty much soaked up in what's happening around us. But for people who don't know, China has changed so much. Well, I imagine it's changed so much since you started filming this that you can barely recognize parts of it. But
that's right.
The whole system has been sort of dismantled and put back together differently. And this looks at three musicians.
That's right. Three and a fourth who's a composer who works with them. And so, I mean, in a nutshell, it was the story of a group of retired traditional Chinese musicians who played, you know, some of the instruments that we see around in some of the more traditional concerts here, and sometimes gets played on the street, things like the arhu and the pipa and those, you know, traditional instruments with a lot of history, some of them thousands of years of history. And they'd retired from what was essentially 100% a state-backed system with lots of orchestras in every major city. And they'd retired at a time when a lot of the orchestras were being merged or closed down, when they were getting less state backing, and so they had to make more of their own money from ticket sales and that kind of thing. But there was a lot of kind of consolidation, and so some of the older musicians, many of the best in the country, took sort of early retirement or retired in their early 60s. And of course, they're still fantastic musicians, and so some of them thought, well, it can't be over, you know, with this. More for us to do. And so they teamed up in little ensembles, and the collection of men and women, the musicians that we followed, did exactly that and teamed up to form this new ensemble that went around, first of all doing one really big concert, but then doing lots of other smaller ones around. And they continue to do that, some of the guys involved in our film, and other groups as well do the same thing. So it's really changed the whole way that traditional music is presented in China. And that's what we thought was the heart of the story, eventually, when we realized that there was actually a kind of narrative flow to it. When we first started, of course, we were just looking at a collection of older people who we thought were just fascinating characters.
It is a fascinating film. I love these characters. I have this overwhelming urge to say, Arthur, go out with your camera and find out what they're doing now. Because I think with all this renewed interest, you might have renewed interest in what's happened to them. Do you keep in touch with these people?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So, very, very sadly, two of the group of four have now died. and so only two of the original core group are left. And they continue to perform widely. I mean, they're very respected, both as performers and recording artists. They do a lot of recording, studio recording, and also as professors of music. I mean, as is the case for a lot of the performing arts in China, many of the people who are the best known performers are often, you know, professors at music conservatories or, say, at the film school or things like that. You know, they have these academic positions as well, and so they continue to teach privately and to perform in independently and get invited all over the place. So that, yeah, they still have quite a high profile. I mean, if you walk into a music store in China that's selling traditional music, you will find their music available there, and more online as well, which is great.
Hmm.
One of the great things about the film, actually, is that as we finished, we'd recorded so much music that we decided to put a soundtrack together. And we had it properly mixed and mastered, and we actually went out and recorded some extra songs for the album as well. And that album, A Farewell Song, is still available on iTunes. So you can actually go and buy the music as well separately.
Hmm. Arthur, was it difficult work to put this film together all those years ago? Because at the time, I imagine that foreigners with cameras are not exactly going to be welcome at things.
There was some of that, but I mean, we do have some of that, you know, and it continue from time to time to have a degree of, you know, a certain amount of challenge shooting in certain places. But honestly, the truth is that most people were very welcoming. It was rare that we had problems, you know, walking into places. And I think if we'd just been on our own walking around, you know, in some of the smaller compounds, smaller residential areas, you know, that you do occasionally have problems. But in this case, we had the best guides that you could possibly have, which are these, you know, very well-connected, really loved older people who were completely not put out at all to be filmed. They one of the great things about filming older people, we found this everywhere, but it's especially true in China, I think, is that old people just, as long as they've chosen to be filmed, they have so much to talk about. They have so many great stories. They have, you know, they live in a very authentic way in front of the camera.
Mm.
So when we started filming this, a few people would say, wow, it's, you know, early 2000s in China and you're doing a story about traditional music. You know, couldn't you do something about, I don't know, dance music or youth movements or graffiti or whatever, which are all great stories. They're great stories. But the problem we had with filming things like that, and we were involved in some productions like that, is always that it was much harder to get younger people to say things. You know, they would do the things they do. They'd be performers and musicians, and they would do their art and their filmmaking and all that, but it was much harder to get them to do other things on camera, to live sort of authentically, for us to be a bit more fly on the wall. Whereas with old people, it was sort of day one we'd arrive, and they'd immediately just didn't care we were there or not. They would just do what they always do.
I think the older people have finally realized that if they don't tell someone now, there's no one left to tell.
Yeah.
If we don't get these stories out there, then they're not out there. And I think with younger kids, they're going, if we put these stories on camera in 20 years' time, someone's going to dredge up this footage from the internet, and I'm going to get fired from my job.
Right. I mean, I think it's changed a bit, you know, since we filmed this, because, of course, now everyone's filming themselves and putting it on YouTube, and the internet has changed a lot. But it wasn't a big factor when we first started making this. So at that, you know, you still had these very sort of slightly media-sensitive people who weren't used to putting their faces out there and didn't necessarily know what to say when you turned on the camera. I mean, the world has changed in a really profound way in the last 10 years because of things like the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at that time, this was a story that seemed both really enigmatic and like something I didn't know anything about, but also fantastically accessible once we knew the right people. You know, there was no door that was ever closed to us. We would walk into very senior, government-connected musicians' offices, people in universities and places like that, and as long as we were with our musicians, they had no problem speaking at all. It was like a sort of seal of approval. We were with the right people. And it always felt like that. I mean, it's worth saying that the background to this was that we were looking for a story about music to tell, just for very simple reasons. We felt like it would be great to have a natural soundtrack that would occur throughout the film. And so because this had such amazing music attached to it, as soon as we realized that these people had things to say about themselves and their lives, it seemed just like such a wonderful, a moment of sort of serendipity that they also brought this great music along as well, and that we could play that throughout, and there wouldn't be rights issues because they were involved in the film. And I should say about the music as well, I mean, I was absolutely blown away by some of the music. I just hadn't expected it. I'd seen a bit of Beijing opera. I'd seen, at this time, I'd been in China 5 or 6 years when we started filming, and I'd seen, as I say, Beijing opera, some of the Shanghai opera. I'd seen some of the more traditional things. I'd seen street performers. What I hadn't seen is people playing the pipa, this kind of lute instrument, like they were Jimi Hendrix. You know, just going nuts with
yes.
the instrument. I'd never seen that before. I'd never seen anything like the sonar player who plays, these incredible tunes like he's Miles Davis or something. I'd no idea that existed. I'd never seen it before. And when we brought people in and filmed people who'd never seen this kind of music before, they were just blown away. I mean, it's incredible when you see it. It's just not what you expect at all from Chinese traditional music, this kind of monolithic thing that we recognize is around us. And maybe it was my own ignorance, but, when I saw it being played for real with great performers, I was utterly shocked, and not just by their brilliance, but also by how kind of completely in your face and visceral the whole thing is when it's played, with some of the more extreme pieces, like Shamir Maifu, which is the famous ambush on all sides piece that gets played often on the pipa and some of the other instruments as well, which is so brash and loud and kind of crazy. It's just amazing.
The last time we spoke to you, the Poseidon Project was just coming out. But you have been a busy little bugger. You've got fingers in every pie. You've got commercial work going. You've got TV work going. You've got your son on cooking programs.
That's right.
What are you working on at the moment?
If you're a documentary man, and, a lot of my focus is documentaries through LP Films, the production company I'm a partner at. We do commercial work as well, and we're always busy with that, and that's great. But a lot of my focus is on documentaries and developing new stories, and I think it's important. It's difficult to get documentary projects off the ground. It's hard to get commissions. It's hard to get funding. There's different ways of doing it now, and so the best thing to do is always have a few on the go, on the back burner, and just see what see what turns up, see what people are interested in, taking it out to broadcasters, and we've got a few that are on the go right now in various stages of development. We have a story about we're working with Stephen Schwanker, the main subject of the Poseidon Project, who was the researcher on that and wrote the book about Poseidon. He and I are looking at a new project about Titanic and a Chinese connection to Titanic that we believe has never been told before in full.
Please don't tell me the iceberg was towed out of Shanghai.
You got it. Amazing guess. So that's one of the big ones. And then there's a few other ones as well, historical ones, medical, mystery. I like the ones where whatever the nuts and bolts of the story, whether it's historical or contemporary, we get to film real things really happening. Mm. Not just portraits of things from the past, but contemporary research, sort of a sense of jeopardy of things really happening right now, whether that's a researcher looking at something in the past or it's something that's actually happening now that we can film. I think that's the tough thing to find. That's what we work on developing always.
Having had a look around at the stuff you're working on and your beautiful time-lapse stuff, that is absolutely bloody amazing. It's a shame we're on sort of audio only here, otherwise
yeah.
I'd be pointing at something and saying, look at this. But if people want to get in touch with you about perhaps something that they think you should be looking into, or just having a look at your work, or generally finding out where things are, is there somewhere they can have a look online for you?
I mean, you can always contact me directly through, I'm on Twitter at Arthur Jones. That's a fairly easy one. But you can also contact me through LP Films, which is online at lpfilms.net. So it's relatively easy to get in touch. And people do get in touch and say, you know, have you seen this? This is going on. And the nature of documentaries is that a lot of things happen on spec, and you just have to go out and get them before the story ends, kind of thing. And then you go looking for someone that will be willing to play it somewhere, to distribute it, hopefully, even if it's 10 years later.
And speaking of 10 years later, where can we go to see A Farewell Song?
Well, A Farewell Song, the best place to see it now is on Vimeo. Vimeo has a great new video on demand service where you can go and rent, so you can stream the film, or you can buy it and download it and keep it. So if you go to vimeo.com/on-demand and then do a search there for A Farewell Song, you'll find it easy enough.
I found it easy enough, but I found it a great film as well. But Arthur, it has been absolutely wonderful talking today about A Farewell Song and things that are coming up. And I hope that when you get some more things out, we get a chance to ring you up at Lost Pensivos Studios and say, Arthur, tell us about your stuff. But thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot, Stuart.